This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, a closer look at ePemula and what support young people in Malaysia need financially.
First, we discuss the complaints that have plagued the launch of ePemula and what could have been done better. Then, since this was meant as a way to offer financial support to young Malaysians, what does this group actually need right now?
So tell us, what financial advice do you wish you'd been told when you were younger? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08. Let's start at the beginning. So ePemula is something that we actually touched on yesterday because Twitter was a Twitter with complaints about it. Now, it was initially an initiative under Budget 2022. And the idea here was to ease the financial burden of young people in Malaysia and to encourage cashless transactions. This is key. Encourage cashless transactions among young people and brick and mortar businesses. All of these things are going to come into play shortly. So eligible individuals would receive 150 ringgit worth of ePemula credit through their chosen e-wallet, which encompasses a number of them. So BigPay, GrabPay, ShopeePay, Touch and Go. And so the criteria here would be for Malaysian citizens aged 18 to 20 years old this year, or for full-time students enrolled in local institutes of higher learning.
Right. So now if we look at the complaints that have come about, because the rollout has begun, many, many frustrated young people have taken to social media to complain about multiple things. Some say that the 150 ringgit can't be used for online shopping. And, you know, as you said, it's meant to be spent at physical stores by scanning the merchant QR codes. And essentially, people were pointing out, I don't live in an area where there are shops that use e-wallet payment modes. In some cases, the credits only came as vouchers within the e-wallet app, and therefore you'd have to cash those vouchers in to make purchases rather than purchase whatever you want, however you may want. Others have found that you may not necessarily be able to use it in the places that you want to use them, right? Because you're tied into whatever that's allowed to be used within that app. So essentially, the aid was meant to help young people make purchases. Mm. But now the question is, what is it actually helping?
So there have been some enterprising young folks who have found ways to withdraw the funds and use them online. Some have purchased ShopeePay top-up cards at convenience stores. Others have created their own merchant QR codes using the Maybank QR PayBiz application and done it that way, which I kind of admire, right? Like if the door is closed to you, then you just find a way to wriggle and wiggle through. But that doesn't change, I think, the fundamental criticisms of this. So I want to say that at the outset, the premise of this is interesting, right? The premise of there being 150 ringgit to encourage e-wallet use, all of those things are great. The targeted group being of particular interest, no problem. I think all of those things are fine. However, and this is a little bit of, something that we see when it comes to implementation, there are gaps in terms of understanding the specific needs of that group and how it is that they might use something. I think that there's also this question of, you want to achieve a certain goal. The group that you're targeting has certain ways, measures, and habits of using things. How can you meet people in the middle, or how can you match those two things up? In this instance, it feels a little bit more like, I'm going to give you this, but you have to come all the way over to how I want to do things. And I think that that has been, in some ways, the root of the complaints.
And if what you're trying to do is encourage more business towards brick and mortar stores, towards physical stores, then has there been enough research and study done into whether e-wallets are really the way to go? Mm. Is every store already equipped, particularly when you move outside the urban areas? And that's something that's being brought up a lot, right? The digital divide in terms of students or young people who might be using ePemula in areas that don't necessarily have the best internet connection or stores that have e-wallet payment in the first place. So what exactly is the gap that you're trying to fill, and are you doing it in the best possible way?
So Dr. Kelvin Yee, who is DAP Socialist Youth's National Chief and of course also MP for Bandar Kuching, made a couple of suggestions, and there's one in particular that I thought was interesting. So firstly, he did say that the government must allow the incentive to be used online for a variety of reasons that we're addressing, also because brick and mortar businesses often have online stores anyway. But the other thing he said is that the government should go on ground and facilitate local businesses in the adoption of cashless transactions. And I think that that is particularly interesting, or perhaps even key to this, because again, it's the left hand, right hand thing. So if on the one hand, we're trying to encourage this to happen, then are businesses actually able to keep up? And if not, then what needs to be done to help them there?
Yes. And really, what I thought of when I heard this sort of, here's the problem, here's how we're going to solve it, is that surely it's not under the purview of young people alone to facilitate the economics situation for brick and mortar stores. These are things that need larger solutions, not just necessarily using this particular program as a way to encourage businesses to physical stores.
So that's what we're going to be covering in the first part of our show. The second, however, is going to be looking at, I guess, the financial status of young people in Malaysia and just what needs to be done to account for some gaps and the difficulties of living through the pandemic, the economic downturn, these various things. So in line with that, we'd like to hear from you. Basically, what financial advice do you wish you'd been told when you were younger? Because I think we all have these thoughts from time to time. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be talking about the rollout of ePemula with Sharon Raj, social activist. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We are talking today about a pair of topics, but basically started from this question, right, of looking at the complaints that have plagued the launch of ePemula. There's no other way to put it. And therefore, we wanted to start off by diving into what happened. But after that, we're also going to be looking at how to offer financial support to young Malaysians in a way that is actually helpful, because that's what ePemula is supposed to achieve. All of which to say, we want to hear from you. What financial advice do you wish you had been told when you were younger? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to talk about this is Sharon Raj, social activist. Sharon, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
First off, what did you make of the ePemula initiative launched earlier this week?
Theoretically and historically, giving out e-wallet grants is actually quite good. And why do I say so? Because this is the third iteration that is being done. And the first two was actually quite successful in meeting its objective. Not many people know the objective was actually to boost the e-wallet penetration among the retail sectors. These are the non-debit cards, non-credit cards retailers. You're talking about the local grocery stores and so on. And this has actually been verified when you look in the payment and digital payment insight study for 2022, which came out barely a few weeks ago. One of the things they highlight was the government grant actually incentivized the rapid adoption of e-wallet. Just before pandemic, we are talking about in 2019-2018, when the Pakatan Harapan government gave the first grant. At that point, e-wallet was the fifth most preferred payment, and cash being the first. But when you look today, after two iterations of e-wallet grant, cash is now ranked third, with e-wallet being the second most preferred. So when you look exactly what the government is trying to do was to move the society towards a cashless-oriented society. That's what they're actually doing. So, of course, there are rhetoric saying that we are trying to ease the burden, so on and so on, but it's not really exactly the point. The point was to actually move people into cashless society, to bring a lot of the retail purchases, which is now cash, to become in the bank or to become a digital payment, so that the government can collect actually more tax and also can monitor how transactions are being made.
So ePemula, that said, has received backlash on social media and for a variety of reasons, right? What were some of the main complaints you've heard?
We can actually categorize the complaint into two. One, due to government restriction. Two, because of the e-wallet restriction itself. So first one, when you leak at the government restriction. So the government restriction says that you cannot do a peer-to-peer transfer. You cannot actually pay your utility bills. You can't actually use it for e-hailing. You can't actually use it to pay toll. You can't actually pay fueling. A lot of things cannot be done. So you can only pay in a physical store. That was the whole point of it. Okay. But when you look, when we're talking about students, they are not going to buy books. Let's be really honest. University students do not buy original textbook from Popular or MPH. They actually buy it from their seniors, or they'll buy from a photostep shop at the end of the university who sells the photocopy of the original version for 20 ringgit or 30 ringgit. University textbooks are really, really expensive. They don't actually buy it on their own. Okay. So when you do not allow peer-to-peer transfer, you can't actually buy stationaries. Certain science, technology, engineering, mathematics students, they actually need software. You're talking about AutoCAD for architecture students. You may need Java programming for IT students. So these kinds of software, they could not purchase. Of course, some of the licensing are actually sold online, but they could not buy it because you could not actually have. So it did not really meet a lot of the purpose what student wants to do. So now that's the government restriction. When you look at the e-wallet restriction, of course, the worst of all would be GrabPay. They actually take a lot of your credits and they convert it into voucher. And some of them say that you must only spend for this. Okay. And when you look where the spending are actually being done, they're actually being said that, oh, you spend at A&W, you spend at KFC, you spend at Caring Pharmacy. You know, these are things which students will not mostly use. Okay. They are not a hyper-consumerist. They have a lot of things to pay. Some of them are living in a rental home. They need to pay electricity. They need to pay their Maxis internet. And no, they can't use that. But you can go and spend it in a Starbucks. So these two restrictions make their life a lot of more miserable. And to make matters worse, when some of these campuses, which are in rural area, where we will not have a lot of choices, you need to buy things online. You need to buy it from a different vendor. But no, you can't buy it online. So these two restrictions make their life so quite miserable, you know, they cannot meet the purpose of what they really need. So when Zafarov is saying this is to e-student, no, it's not really. It's purely rhetorics.
Now, different e-wallets actually have different means of using the aid, right? So in one instance, the 150 ringgit cannot be used online. People have to go to physical stores to spend that money. What kind of potential challenges does this pose?
I mean, this can be a really, really challenge if the things that they need are not within the place that they are living. And one thing we have to remind, a lot of universities, both private and public, restrict students from having car for the first 2 or 3 years, right? So now you have a transport issue. You can't go out to purchase it. And on campus, you cannot find it. Even if it's due, it will be more expensive. So they are forced to either buy it at a very high price, or they could not actually buy the stuff itself. Neither they could make that transfer to their friend to go and buy. Okay, so when you look this, it became really, really challenging for them that the certain 150 ringgit serve no purpose for a lot of people. And the only thing they can do is they can keep it until there comes a day where they actually goes out for them to buy it. Right? So these are the things which was not factored in at all. Right? They assume that the students are actually very mobile. Truthfully, 90% of the students are not mobile. They are actually constrained to the campus because they're not allowed to bring vehicles. Neither Malaysia actually have a comprehensive public transport.
And then in other instances, of course, the money is provided only in the form of vouchers. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that is what we call pure blunt thief. Because the government have explicitly said that it's meant for offline purchases. Fine, it was in the FAQ, you can't do it for peer-to-peer, but it was in the FAQ, fine. We can, you know, let's bite that. But when some of them convert it only to vouchers and say that you can spend instead, that's actually thief. That is actually thiefing. And to make matters worse, when you go into details why they do that, when you look at e-wallet, when you make certain purchases, the merchant do not get the full amount. Say you go to KFC, you spend 10 ringgit, merchant does not get 10 ringgit. They actually get lesser than that because there is a deduction known as merchant discount rate. So the e-wallet provider makes a certain amount of deduction, okay? But when you look, a lot of e-providers, they actually do not impose merchant discount rate to small retailers. They don't impose to your penjaja. They don't retail it to the grocery shop awang in your campus. They don't impose it on the local shop. So a lot of these guys do not impose, but they impose on the bigger ones. You're talking about KFC, A&W, Caring Pharmacy. All these guys actually have. So they want you to spend there, so they will make the merchant discount rate. So imagine if 100 millions were spent, they will easily make a few millions out of it because of the merchant discount, right? So these are the things that is not being known to the people. So they are giving it voucher because they want you to spend only in a certain places because for them to get the merchant discount rate. So this is the worst form, and it's actually technically steep, you know, because the government policy have clearly stated it is for offline purchases. And the government did not say you only can spend in F&B, in Caring Pharmacy, in Starbucks. No, the government said you cannot do this, but you do any other offline purchases. But then here comes the one e-wallet say, no, you can't do that. You only spend where do I say? And the worst part, it was not actually written in the terms of condition. It was not informed. So you, when it comes to when you talk about consumer rights, the students or the peoples or the youth was not informed. There was no prior informed consent. When you read it, you immediately get a voucher. That's it. So that's how you spend it. So this is technically thief.
Now, a lot of conversations have also come up about young people living in rural areas. So let's start breaking it down, right? On the one hand, allowing it to be used online would benefit people who don't have stores with QR codes nearby. Could you tell us more about this?
Well, as I mentioned just now, Malaysia actually have a progressive policy where we build all of our higher education in rural and semi-rural area. So this is in a way to actually move people out of urban and make sure have some spending to kickstart the economy there. So it is by design that a lot of our IPTA, all our public higher education center, is actually in quite in far rural areas, which is good. But when you look at this place, some of these places do not actually have a sufficient internet connection. They do not have a stable internet connection. So adoption of e-wallet here can be quite tough when you don't have a minimum of 4G, you don't have a fiber, and your options are quite limited. So here, a lot of cash transactions happen. And if you look at the PayNet report for 2022, they say a lot of rural areas are still exclusively running on cash, okay, because this is a telecommunication hurdles for them. And now, when you say that you cannot use online, so it restricts them from actually making any proper purchases. So what is the point of giving them the money at the first place? Okay, so they should have actually allowed online. This would be quite good. And the government may actually argue that, you know, online will not benefit because you want more physical stores to actually convert to cashless. It is not actually entirely true. When you look, there is a lot of stores actually convert themselves to online. They join Lazada. They become a merchant with Shopee and so on. And they advertise themselves there because people were buying online. So now when you allow the e-wallet credit, especially student items and youth items to be sold there, these shops will actually convert themselves to become an online shop, right?
What are some of the needs of this group that should be prioritized when rolling out CashAid? Why is it important for CashAid to be accessible, convenient, as well as easy to use?
When we actually provide CashAid, CashAid is actually the most progressive version of any form of public support, because one-size-fits-all subsidy is usually tends to fail. An example is petrol. Bank Negara report already reveals that 40% of our petrol subsidy goes to the top 20%. So when you give these kinds of itinerary subsidized, it does not actually reach that. But when it comes to CashAid, when you give to a certain population, they can choose what they want rather than subsidizing a certain thing. Different people have different needs, different groups, different ethnicity, different everybody, we have variety, okay? So, but when you give a CashAid and you start what we call fencing them, say you can't buy this, you can't do that, okay, so things will become more complicated because people will have different needs. Like one of the things has been told that money is to use to buy textbook, but you look when you buy an original, any university textbook, a higher education textbook, say from MPH or Popular, it costs over 3 digits. So you have option of just buying one textbook, or you can go to their photostat shop and buy. Well, of course, some people will talk about copyright issues, but you see, we are students, we are broke. So they will end up buying from the photostat shop and they can buy 3 or 4. And some of them actually buys from the senior. So the same university book will be used by 7 different generations, you know, and university books last only for 1 semester. So they have a different need. So when you give something like that, and you put a fencing, you will actually become the same problem when you regress it. So CashAid should be given unconditionally. You should make it more accessible so people can actually meet their needs. But there'll be a lot of people who argue saying that if you give them cash, people will squander, people will misuse. Actually, no. There is a lot of study done based on the cashier that is given to the people. They have actually used it properly. You know, there have also been claims that students will use it to buy tobacco, you use alcohol. No, it was not actually done. They have used it to actually meet their needs. And this you can look from the impact of the first two e-wallet grants.
Sharon, we have 30 seconds left with you. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with?
When government designs policy, it is very important they bring stakeholders in, and it's very important not to give a free hand, because the e-wallet grant is actually a good policy. In fact, the first two iterations did quite well. However, when they leave it as an open-ended to the e-wallet, we have seen a lot of scrupulous things that have happened. Some of it was forcefully converted to vouchers to buy things they don't know any, and some of it have tried to excessively profit it from by asking, saying that you can only use it to a certain merchants. And it have also made it irrelevant for a lot of people. Yes, the government intention is good, but implementation matters. So for that matters, whenever government does something, it needs to bring the real stakeholder in rather than just discussing with a handful of executive wearing tie and suit in aircon room, because they do not know what is the best for the people. So you need to bring people in to have discussion, or else a lot of such blunders continues to happen.
Sharon, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Sharon Raj, social activist, talking about the issues surrounding the e-Pamula rollout and what could have been done better. Keep those thoughts coming and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:39 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We've been spending this hour taking a look at e-Pamula, which was an initiative under Budget 2022 that was supposed to ease the financial burden of young people in Malaysia and to also encourage e-wallet penetration, right? Cashless transactions, but specifically with brick and mortar businesses. And that's what we started off with, looking at the complaints around it. But now we want to look at its intended purpose. In other words, this idea of providing financial support for young people and full-time students in our country. And we thought it would be good to, I suppose, examine that more closely and look at what it is that they might need. But we've also been asking you for your thoughts in line with this idea of, you know, money, young people. What financial advice do you wish you had been told when you were younger? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And we have some messages.
Brian says, on financial advice when you were younger, it would be buy a small second-hand car as your first car and leave your ang pao money in FD instead of in your cupboard.
I think that, well, there are a number of things to pick up on. I think that second-hand car as your first car, though, is a great, great point, because I do think that there is often this drive to... I keep doing this. It's an accident, I swear. But there is this... Well, I've said it now, drive, to get a reasonably priced but new car. And I do think that there is tremendous value actually in going secondhand, provided you know what you're looking for and you have very specific search parameters and you do all your due diligence. But otherwise, I actually think it's a great option.
An anonymous listener says, the power of compounding interest and retirement fund planning. I wish I can forward this message to my younger self.
Fair enough. I also wish I could. And retirement fund planning, this is something that I think we talk about a lot. And yet the fundamental unsexiness of it all does continue to keep people off.
It's that. And because I remember feeling this, it's also a sense of I'm too young to think about this. I have time and I will do it later. So both of those things coming together means that often you put it off and put it off until you wish you'd done it earlier.
And then you spend so much time putting it off and then suddenly you find yourself in a panic, you know, when it's not too late, but when it's later. I did want to read this that isn't exactly mentioning this issue of advice to younger self, but is related to e-Pamula from Kamaru Nizam, who says, you know, if you go to a photocopy shop, you pay by QR code. It's no problem, right? Ah, Twitteratis, much ado about small things. I mean, you were given money, 500 ways to spend it, yet you complain about 10 difficulties you face. Let the young learn a bit. If Grab isn't good, then choose other wallets. Choose a suitable wallet for yourself.
Well, I'm not sure whether that's necessarily fair, though, right? Because one thing that many of them have said is that they didn't know what the terms and conditions would be before they cashed in their e-Pamula. The other thing being, I don't think they're necessarily talking about it being, this is inconvenient or this is difficult. Sometimes it's a reality of there is literally nowhere that I can use these vouchers or these e-wallet payments at, which I think is very different from complaining with no good reason.
Yes, and I think that it's also important, I suppose, to think about it not just as a free cash handout. You know, it's also thinking about the promise that was given and what it's actually supposed to achieve, and therefore whether it is achieving it. I do think that some of the complaints are very, very granular, but I don't think that that necessarily makes it any less valid. Keep those thoughts coming, whether it is about ePermula or the financial advice that you wish you'd been able to get when you were younger, basically. What do you wish you'd been told? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, talking about the financial needs of young people in Malaysia, we have Felix Neo, Director of Financial Planning at Fin Wealth Management. Felix, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I actually had a first question, but now I want to start by asking you what we're asking our listeners, actually, which is, what do you wish you'd been told when you were younger?
I think it's a great question, right? This is a question that always, always comes up. And I think it starts with, you know, very simple things, right? For example, tracking your finances, right? Have the listeners actually gone through the trouble of preparing a budget, you know, and comparing the budget against the actual, you know, have they been actually keeping a tight rein in terms of their expenses, right? And nowadays, it's just so easy to get into debt, right? So, you know, I think what we need to focus on is really to ensure that whatever that we spend our monies every month, we need to ensure that we pay off everything, right? No credit card debt, rollover, you know, to the following month and all that kind of stuff. And also, if I may say, you know, this whole fad about this, you know, buy now, pay later, I think that's something that really should be at the, you know, at your back burner, right? If you can afford to pay for it in cash today, then, you know, you can afford it. If you can't, then, you know, you can't afford it, right? And I heard just now, you know, you were talking about focusing on, you know, growing income, as well as, letting the money so-called compound over time and all that kind of things. And I just want to bring home this message about growing income. You know, for someone who's still very young, very often people think that, oh, because I'm very young and because I don't have enough money, therefore I need to grow the return on investment, the ROI. But I think you would find that, you know, growing income is more important, right? So it is about, you know, how you're actually growing your careers, right? Because you want to actually move up to the next level in terms of your careers. So that's where, you know, incomes will get higher, the benefits will get better, right? And someone was mentioning just now about, you know, why don't you participate in the gig economy? Because actually, you know, we have, quite a number of hours, not everybody, but, you know, you probably have some time, spare time that you can actually use. So how about monetizing that spare time, right? If you are able to participate in the gig economy, right? The second last thing I would say is basically you need to build the right kind of investing and financing habit, investing and savings habits, right? So it's really not putting, you know, very lofty kind of targets in front of you. Start with what you can afford. Even if it's $50 a month, start from there, right? And as you receive your annual increments, commit to putting aside a large portion of those annual increments into your savings and investing plans, right? And the last one really is about, you know, increasing the financial knowledge, right? Increasing your knowledge and your understanding about personal finance, right? That is, if you ask me, the key, especially when you're very young.
So how has the pandemic impacted Malaysian young people financially compared to other age groups?
I can only imagine that it's been hard, right? Simply because you just imagine, right? You're starting out in your careers, you know, and in the past, you know, perhaps a certain level of job security was there or perceived to be there, right? Suddenly you are in a situation where companies are actually, you know, having to respond to all that's going around, right? So the job security, of the past is no longer there. And then, you know, it doesn't help that Malaysia is actually quite notorious, you know, for having low incomes, especially for low salaries, but especially for fresh grads, right? So you have a situation where incomes are low, but the cost of living is rising, right? So when you put them all together, you can already imagine that I think it's challenging.
We're speaking today with Felix Neo, Director of Financial Planning at FinWealth Management, basically about the financial needs or, you know, sound financial practices, right, for younger people in our country. We're going to continue the conversation after this, but we'd like to hear from you. Basically, we've been asking, what financial advice do you wish you had been told when you were younger? Share your thoughts with us and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Become fabulous millionaires. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:49 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, and we're talking today about Ipamula and now about basically financial practices that young people can put in place, because when else to start, right? So we're speaking with Felix Neo, Director of Financial Planning at FinWealth Management. Felix, let's talk some numbers, right? It was reported last year that 47% of young people in Malaysia have high credit card debt. What does this say about overall spending patterns?
You know, as I had alluded to earlier, right, we are actually in a situation where wages tends to be on the low side, right? And the cost of living is high, right? So when people, you know, need to try and meet those, demands of the higher living expenses, that's where, you know, they are actually getting into credit card debts and, you know, all sorts of debts that basically, you know, just puts them down into this a spiral of sorts, right? So basically, you know, you have a situation where the likes of, you know, AKPK and all that will need to come into the picture, right, to help get a lot of young Malaysians out of this credit card debt cycle.
And if we look at a survey by Ringgit Plus, 57% of respondents who are under 35 are unable to survive on their savings for more than 3 months. What are your thoughts on these findings?
It's all actually pointing to the same direction, right? We have a situation where many of our younger population just don't have enough, to meet their living expenses. And it's a vicious cycle of sorts, right? They are unable to even weather, financial storms, so-called, you know, because they don't even have the 3 months emergency funding, right? So if the minute that you stop the paycheck, you know, they are in financial trouble already, right? So this is definitely worrying.
And this is something that we talked about earlier as well. We heard it from a message. More than half have not started planning for retirement. Now, in your opinion, when should one actually start saving up for this?
Yeah, that's the problem, that we always face when we speak to a young adult, right? Fresh grad, early careers and all that. You talk about retirement planning and they just stare at you, right? And they give you the, I'm going to live forever kind of a look, right? So, you know, if you ask a financial planner, we'll always say the same thing, right? As soon as possible, that's when you should be starting, planning for your retirement, simply because, right, of the beauty of, compounding returns, right? Start very simply with, just think about EPF, for example. You know, if you're fortunate to be in the formal economy, right, then EPF contribution is a compulsory thing. So it's really a wonderful, avenue to be saving with EPF, simply because your money gets deducted, before you actually see, what's in your bank account, right? But more importantly, hey, the employer is actually going to be contributing 12% for you as well, right? So, it's all good there, right? But of course, that alone is insufficient, right? And then especially for those listeners who may not be in the, formal so-called economy, right? Then you need to take, a little bit of action, right? To set aside some investments for yourself. So you can actually use, there are plenty of platforms out there, unit trust platforms, robo-advisors, you name it, compare it, which one's actually suitable for you, but ensure that you go for the licensed platforms, the Securities Commission licensed platforms. And then you should actually set up regular savings plans, right? Contribute a fixed amount on a monthly basis, right? And commit to growing that amount over time as your income rises.
Now, we often hear about percentages that we should be saving and investing. What's a reasonable way to go about this, in your opinion?
So we have a rule of thumb. I mean, again, the value of rule of thumb sometimes is just, just to give you some kind of a basic guidance, right? So we always say you should be saving at least 30% of your income, right? But the beauty of it is, again, if you are in the formal economy, With EPF, you're already contributing 11, your employer is contributing 12, you have 23% already saved. So hey, you're already, you know, having a very good start. So you just need to save that little bit extra, that 7% or 10% extra, right? So I think if you are able to aim for that 30 and, you know, commit to growing that over time, then I think you're in, you know, a good position.
So what happens then if you are on the lower end of the income scale and potentially also not actually in formal employment, right? In terms of being able to support yourself and then also create some form of financial buffer.
Yeah. So yeah, this is where, you know, it gets really challenging because I can already imagine that, you know, your finances are so-called as lean as it gets, right? There is little fat, if at all, you know. So in this type of a scenario, I would say, your focus really should be on income because there is only so much that you can actually cut down in terms of expenses, right? And, you know, people in this scenario will likely strike me as, you know, really paying very close attention in terms of, you know, all the expenses, right? So really it's about, you know, looking for ways to grow the income, you know, be it, you know, from the gig economy, as we had said, taking up a second job or focus on your career, right? Don't get distracted because, you know, if you want to, you know, earn the big bucks in your chosen careers, then you need to put in the work, you know, in order to prove yourself, not only to yourself, but also to your employers so that they are able to, you know, give you the opportunity, right, to rise within the career ladder.
Now, to your knowledge, how financially literate are young Malaysians and what steps can be taken to improve this?
I would say that we have a mixed bag out there. I do recognize and, you know, I want to congratulate those. We noticed that there are some, young though they may be, you know, but they are very interested in, you know, personal finance, you know, and they need to be congratulated, right? But we need more people, right, to be involved and engaged. Why? Simply because this is not going to be a fad, you know. This is something that they're going to be involved with and managing for the rest of their life, right? So there are people that we might encounter who say, oh, you know what, I don't really give too much thought about that. Oh, you know, I don't really know this, I don't really know that. Oh, you know, it's money, I don't know how to, and I don't like numbers and what have you. But no, you need to start getting interested in managing money. And the beauty of, you know, the world that we live in today is that there's ample resources available to you at a click of a button, right? Just go online and you can actually see lots of resources. If YouTube is your thing, you know, go and look at all the vlogs and all that. But of course, right, be careful about so-called people who put themselves out there to be gurus, right? So you really need to ensure that you are following, like-minded, you know, people who are preferably licensed, you know, by their respective jurisdictions and authorities, right? But the point out here is, you know, there is ample access to knowledge that you can actually gain if you, you know, invest the time and, you know, learn and read and practice what you've actually read.
We have just about a minute left with you. In closing, apart from financial aid, what other long-term measures would you like to see the government take to help young people improve their financial health?
Yeah, actually, I don't like financial aid simply because, you know, you just give that money, 150 bucks, you know, just go to your Pasar Ramadan and you will really know how long that money will last you, right? So we really need to teach, you know, financial literacy at a much younger age, right? Schooling age, right? And we also, I think what we also need to do is to, you know, step up governance in terms of, you know, scams and all that. You know, Malaysia is actually quite famous for all of that, right? And, you know, we need to focus, I think government needs to actually focus on structural shifts, right, in the underlying economy to be able to move everybody up in terms of the income curve.
Felix, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
That was Felix Neo, Director of Financial Planning at FinWealth Management, talking about, I think, just, you know, some healthy habits that can be put in place, especially for young people in Malaysia. This is part of a larger conversation that began with complaints around the ePermula rollout. Let us know what is financial advice you wish that you had been told when you were younger. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.